Welcome to New Mexico in Focus, the podcast for Monday, August 7th, 2023. I'm Lou DeVizio. Let's get into the headlines. We're working to understand the impact of a fire that broke out at an industrial plant and plastic storage facility in Albuquerque Sunday. If you were outside in the city yesterday, you probably saw the thick black smoke coming from Atcor Manufacturing Facility south of the Albuquerque International Sunport. The fire quickly turned into a multi-alarm and multi-jurisdictional fire Sunday afternoon, prompting city and county officials to issue a health alert. The warning extended through Sunday night and warned people to limit outdoor activities, close windows, and use air conditioners in recycle mode, saying that there could be, quote, potentially hazardous pollutants in the air from the fire. No one died in the fire, but crews shut down roads in the area, saying it could burn for potentially days. We've called the city, the State Environment Department, and Albuquerque Fire to get a better understanding of what exactly is burning there, how it started, and the severity of any potential pollution. Stay with New Mexico in Focus and Our Land for updates as we learn more. Los Alamos National Laboratory is considering creating a satellite campus in either Santa Fe or Bernalillo County to accommodate its growing workforce. LANL says the proposed expansion would reduce traffic congestion and make getting to work more convenient for employees who commute from northern Albuquerque and Bernalillo County. The lab's deputy director of operations says the expansion proposal comes as the lab's budget has roughly doubled to $4.6 billion since 2018. If approved by the National Nuclear Security Administration, the mini-campus would start small, hosting about 50 people. The Santa Fe New Mexican reached out to officials from both Santa Fe and Bernalillo counties, and they say that they haven't spoken with anyone from the lab about the idea. Victims of a destructive wildfire caused by the U.S. Forest Service in northern New Mexico are finally set to receive compensation, with more than $14 million due to landowners next week, according to federal emergency managers. Congress allocated the $4 billion fund to cover claims from last year's Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon fire. The recovery process has been slow and challenging for lawmakers and people waiting on payout money. Angela Gladwell is the claims office director. She told the Associated Press that more than 1,600 loss notices have been filed and around $50 million in claims are currently being processed. The claims office says it plans on being up and running for the next 5 to 6 years to make sure everyone who is impacted is compensated. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has publicly urged FEMA to work faster in helping New Mexicans impacted by the fire. Last week on the podcast, I told you about the announcement from the U.S. Forest Service that the Cerro Pelado fire in the Jemez last year started as a result of Forest Service action. The Forest Service says a holdover fire from a prescribed burn 2 weeks prior ignited brush in the forest, sparking the fire. This past week, Gene Grant caught up with Source New Mexico reporter Patrick Lohman to talk about how holdover fires happen and what this announcement could mean for future prescribed burns.
Having a conversation today about fires here in New Mexico. We're 2 days in August as we sit here in a very punky fire season so far. Punky meaning the word fire has a bit of a different connotation this season so far. We're here with Patrick Lohman. He is a reporter for Source New Mexico and ProPublica, and his publications have done a bit of reporting on the situation. We wanted to catch up with you, Patrick, about the fire service, and they confirmed that last month that the April 22 Cerro Pelado fire, which we're all talking about now, was initially a prescribed burn, of course, as we all know that, but the confirmation means that three fires in New Mexico, when you step back from it, were caused by prescribed burns gone awry. Where are we now in the perception? Let's start with perception about these prescribed burns and the results and how we're dealing with them at this point.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you that I've been spending all year focused on the aftermath of the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon fire, which was a collision of two prescribed burns. One of them was a pile burn, like the Cerro Pelado fire. Another one was a broadcast burn, basically meaning a crew of hotshots go out and like light areas around where they want to treat the forest. And, you know, since then, people have been very wary every time they hear that a prescribed burn is going on. Even though, you know, the Forest Service stresses that a very small number of them ever escape and become declared wildfires, you know, you can understand why a lot of people have a form of PTSD about, you know, the Forest Service driving up a back county road to light a fire or to light a pile on fire. So, you know, we know that the state has tried its best to prevent prescribed burns in New Mexico, at least during certain times of the year. Despite that, the Forest Service says it's not really held to state law on that front. So they've continued prescribed burning throughout the state this summer.
Interesting point there. We'll touch on that in a second about what they are obligated or not to do. We don't want to get ahead of folks, certainly. Could you just very quickly describe what is a prescribed burn? But even more importantly than that, Patrick, what are these mounds that seem to just burn away for like a year before they decide to become a big problem? What is all that for folks that don't know what these things are?
Yeah, well, generally the way that this begins is that a large area is approved through an environmental analysis for a number of treatments that can include thinning, certain mitigation measures, and also burning as a tool to try to create healthy forests and return fire to the landscape. You know, a lot of forests across the West, including in New Mexico, are very dense and overgrown, where, the natural forest would have, you know, a certain 25 trees per acre or something like that. Now it's 100 or more.
Wow.
They're trying to, you know, thin these forests to make fire a more healthy part of the landscape and not allow for really high intensity burns with crowning that, you know, destroy and are completely unpredictable. So that's sort of the goal of them. Mm-hmm. They have a couple of ways to do that. One is a broadcast burn, which is when it's a crew of firefighters and they have an established area where they would like to burn, and they use drones or kind of flame, like putting dropping flame is what they call it, like little flamethrowers. And then there's a pile burn, which has resulted in two escaped wildfires in New Mexico that we know of this year. Basically, the Forest Service will use a variety of thinning measures to take down ladder fuels or other material, and they amass them into these piles, and then they burn those piles. Unfortunately, what has happened in two instances is that embers will embed deep within these piles, and then despite, you know, snowfall or months of time passing, they will stay smoldering until in like this year, for example, on April 22nd, it was a very intense wind event that just caused a lot of chaos for about 20 fires burning in the state at a single time in this last year. And that included a single ember, you know, smoldering in a pile that had been amassed and burned in January of last year. So it had smoldered for 4 months. This is the Calf Canyon fire. One thing that I've heard in talking to some experts on wildland firefighting lately is that normal practice for these pile burns would be, they would be amassed by hand. So you would clear all this material and then you would, you know, have the crews like with their own hands piling them up into small piles and lighting them. And that had a couple of benefits. One, it took more work, more resources, more people, which is a challenge facing the Forest Service at the moment. But smaller piles, there tends to be less risk of this happening than what's happening now, which are these mechanized pile burns, where they're using bulldozers or other heavy equipment to pile them all into one big pile. The piles are bigger, and there's also dirt in the pile, which allows the embers to kind of embed more deeply and be harder to monitor. So that's sort of what I have read in the Cerro Pelado fire had occurred. And that's something that I think is an interesting new phenomenon that might be explaining why some of these pile burns are left to smolder.
That's fascinating. I actually had not heard that level of detail when it concerns dirt. In the second you mentioned that, it was like, of course, holy smokes, this is interesting. Which begs another question, of course, and I'm sure you've heard about this a lot, Patrick, is folks have a lot of confusion about why can't you just wet these things down, just soak the mess out of them and just be done with it. Why is the Forest Service even are there any new protocols that have come to the surface from them that you've been able to report on how to deal with these piles so they don't flare up again?
Yeah, I think that is a very key point about the ongoing conversation that's happening, especially in light of the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon fire, about prescribed burns. So as we know, the pile burn, the Calf Canyon fire, and the broadcast burn, the Hermit's Peak fire, merged, became the biggest fire in state history. There is now, you know, this caused a cascading number of events that has decimated the forest and devastated lives in northern New Mexico. After this fire occurred, the Forest Service did a 90-day review and paused all prescribed burns across the country to figure out what went wrong. The vast majority of that review focused on the broadcast burn, the Hermit's Peak fire. You know, so we know a huge amount of detail about where the crew was briefed the day of the Hermit's Peak fire when they walked up Hermit's Peak from the El Porvenir campground to light this fire, and exactly what happened in a moment by moment, you know, kind of like timeline of events. And a lot of the recommendations came out about how to prevent these types of broadcast burns from escaping. There was very little time and effort spent on the pile burn, which was the Calf Canyon burn. And so I think that there needs to be a renewed level of scrutiny from the Forest Service and society generally on how many of these pile burns are sitting out, potentially smoldering right now, and what's going to be done to make sure that they are monitored more consistently and maybe done in a way that mitigates the risk against these types of things flaring up in months or years later after they're ignited.
I have an ignorant question. I apologize for this, but does the public have access to any GPS coordinates or any other coordinates about where these piles are? Or is it just the Forest Service that knows where they are physically?
Yeah, there is some review. There's some pre-notice on nmfire.com, nmfireinfo.com, where they'll tell you that we're about to do broadcast burn in this general area. If you have a bit of sophistication with infrared data, there's a few sites where you can look to see where there's like detected hot, you know, like hot spots. You might be able to find it there. When it came to the Calf Canyon fire, when we were reporting on this back in April of last year, we were able to find dispatch records that showed someone called the Santa Fe Interagency Dispatch Center after the fire and wondered if this, if the fire that he saw was actually the pile burn from January, you know. So we can see some of the communications, like, you know, some of the dispatch records, some of this data coming forward. But generally speaking, you know, the Forest Service is not very transparent and doesn't have much in the way of public review or public input before they light these fires. They're kind of going off of a broad environmental assessment that can be completed or a prescribed burn plan that can be completed 4 or 5 years in advance of actually lighting the fire. I think that it's kind of a trade-off that the Forest Service will tell you, you know, if we allow these things to go to public comment or to have this whole, a full airing of this, that inhibits our ability in a short window during the year for us to light this fire. And so we're going to be doing less of what we believe and most people believe is a vital fire forest health tool. But at the meantime, you know, a lot of people do feel like this is all just going on without any of their input and there's not much information available. Also, a very key part of this, which we know, which was absolutely true during the Cerro Pelado fire, is it takes a very long time for the Forest Service to release information about the causes of fires. There's a number of fires across New Mexico and across the West that, you know, are still under investigation technically. You know, this was true for the Calf Canyon fire. You know, the Forest Service took weeks to own up to the fact that they had started the fire. In the meantime, there were a lot of like rumors circulating, conspiracies about what could have happened, what couldn't have happened. And as we know with the Cerro Pelado fire, it took more than a year for the Forest Service finally to admit the fact that they started it. There are some impacts that I can talk about.
Sure. That's amazing. Let's talk about one of them. Interesting, in Source New Mexico, you guys reported how FEMA has paid less than 1% of the $3 billion Congress allocated, which had a lot of push, of course, from our local delegation, as you well know. And that was for victims of the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon fire. What's the deal on FEMA funds? How are they allocated? Why is it always there's a guaranteed follow-up headline just like this? Once they're allotted, then 6 months later, there's the guaranteed headline, well, the money's not really going out. We're not really quite sure why. What's the hang up here when it comes to getting people whole after a fire like this?
Right. Well, it's a very unique situation that we're in with the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon fire. And that FEMA has only twice in its history made an effort to actually fully compensate victims of a wildfire. The reason that they're doing that, of course, is because the federal government started it. They're liable. So now they're in this position of administering a $4 billion fund, trying to actually pay people the replacement value of their home and pay local governments for all of the revenues that they lost and like help people like really rebuild to their pre-fire lifestyle and return to the land that they've cultivated for hundreds of years in some instances. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing to do, and FEMA's not very used to doing it. They had to kind of assemble an office in 45 days. They have to issue rules and guidelines. They have to staff up. These are all the defenses that FEMA is offering as to why it's taking so long. For a lot of people, in the burn scar, it's been 14 months since this fire started, and they've yet to receive a dime in some cases, or they've gone through a million layers of bureaucracy trying to get this and that done, or they've been denied for some unclear reason and then have to appeal. That's just creating a lot of challenges for people, and it's taking a really long time by any account.
Mm-hmm. That's a fascinating point, because money needs to be part of this. Another question here. There's something about what we've got going on here that just, again, it just still boggles the mind when you think about it from a regular citizen's point of view. Whose feet does this solely lay on? Is it the Forest Service? Does the state have some culpability? There's a lot of struggle out there trying to tie this all together in one's mind as a citizen. What's your sense of that?
Yeah, I mean, these are absolutely federal wildfires ignited by them. I think you can't look too much far beyond the Forest Service and some of these agencies that are doing this often without much communication with state and local officials or even right. Members around them. The Forest Service has a statistic that 99.89% of prescribed burns are extinguished and do what they need to do. And I think that's worth keeping in mind, but that's hard to tell members of the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon fire that it's a rare occurrence. And I think that, you know, what's occurring now with these, you've got the Cerro Pelado fire, the Hermit's Peak fire, the Calf Canyon fire, and of course, all the way back to 2001, the Cerro Grande fire, mm-hmm. It's very devastating events that have occurred because of these. And the Forest Service needs to reassure the public that it won't happen again. The other fact that's kind of lurking above this is, as we know that our forests are at higher risk due to climate change, right. The Biden administration is intending to greatly increase across the West the number of forests that are treated with some of these methods, including prescribed burns, potentially even increasing the number of acres treated with prescribed burns four times over the next 10 years. So wow. It's very possible, given how volatile and chaotic and how the models that the Forest Service uses to determine the safety of a prescribed burn are sort of being outpaced by the rate of climate change, that this can happen again. And it probably will happen again, just given on the numbers. So the way that the Forest Service tries to prepare to prevent these fires from escaping, and the way the Federal Emergency Management Agency or any other federal agency charged with disaster response can handle trying to compensate people in the event, these are all things that the Forest Service and the federal government more broadly need to pay a lot of attention to, specifically in New Mexico, to see if we can make sure that this goes more smoothly the next time it happens, because it will likely happen again.
Let me go back to something real quick here, Patrick. We get a lot of feedback about the idea of ground cover. You mentioned it earlier. It's a problem. We've got generations of it on our forest floor, overgrowth. We haven't had the natural cycle of burns every 25 years or so. And I get a lot of feedback saying, roughly goes like this: why can't the state just pay people to do ground cover pickup? And I'm always like, do you realize how big our state is, first of all? Second of all, it's a great idea, but do you have a thought on that? That does come up in conversation. We talk about ground cover, but there's really not much to be able to be done with it outside of burning, if I'm following that the train of thought correctly. Am I right on that?
I have to admit, I don't have a ton of expertise on like these other alternative methods for fuels treatment. I think all options should be on the table as far as the Forest Service is concerned, especially the safer options, especially in areas like New Mexico during the winter season. It just seems like the conditions on the ground should determine the option and the models that the Forest Service is using to try to determine the risk and the likelihood of an escape should all factor that in much more than they are doing so far.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, I want to thank you very much. It's been actually very enlightening. It's Patrick Lohman, of course, from Source New Mexico and ProPublica. We haven't had quite the ripping fire season like we've had in a couple of years before, but it's on, certainly. And Patrick, your information is a big help. And might we call on you at some point in the future if this thing being forest fires decides to have another late summer spark, as they say. We'd love to hear from you as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Folks, we'll see you on the regular show Friday night, of course, 7 o'clock, Channel 5.1, and Sunday mornings as well, 7 a.m. on Channel 5.1 as well. Until then, see you next time.
Thanks to Gene and to Patrick Lohman for making time to speak with us. You can find more of Patrick's work by clicking on the link in the podcast description. Now, for more reaction to that announcement about the Cerro Pelado fire. Joining Gene at the table for a panel discussion are Paula Garcia, Executive Director of the New Mexico Acequia Association, John Fleck, a professor at the University of New Mexico, who's also a water researcher at the university's Utton Center, and freelance journalist Elizabeth Miller. Here's Gene.
Now we begin with a look back to spring 2022. That's when the Cerro Pelado fire burned up nearly 45,000 acres in the Jemez Mountains. Now we've learned the U.S. Forest Service caused that fire through their management techniques. The fire burned for nearly 2 months, as you might recall, destroying 10 structures and forcing people nearby to evacuate. Now the Forest Service says a holdover fire from a prescribed burn 2 weeks prior ignited brush in the forest, sparking the fire. Now, although we've known about the prescribed burn for well over a year, the Forest Service didn't confirm the connection between those two until last month. Let's start with why we're here just now hearing this, John, that this prescribed burn caused the Cerro Pelado fire. Is there a legitimate reason, John, for the U.S. Forest Service to be so tight-lipped about its work and the causes of its work? From your sense of it, why do they do this? Why does it take so long to get info from them?
So the short answer is no. One of the things that we have seen, and you know, I had a career as a journalist before I entered academia and saw this over the time that I worked in newspapers, an increasing unwillingness by government agencies, especially the federal government, to be interactive and forthcoming with information about controversial subjects. Was a time when I would call the Forest Service, for example, and the director of the forest would get on the phone with me, right? And you could have those kind of conversations. Increasingly, for a variety of reasons, but information control is one of the most important ones, that's not happening. And I think that's really problematic in this particular case, given the community impacts and the importance of our ability in dealing with the problem of our forest management, to work together across the boundaries of government agencies. The top of that pyramid is the federal government.
Interesting points there. Elizabeth, welcome to the table, first of all, first time here. I'm curious, this was the third fire started by the U.S. Forest Service last year, all of them being the direct result of prescribed fires. How necessary are these prescribed fires? We always ask this question for forest management and everything else. We hear a lot of things about ground cover. You know, we've had a lot of things come up, and we're not terribly thinned statewide. Are our hands tied here? Do we have to do this at this point?
I think the role of prescribed fire ecologically is it's hugely important. We did 110 years of wildfire suppression. You know, the rule was to get every smoke out by 10 a.m. the next day. And the result of that is that we do have a lot of dense stands of trees, sometimes even different species of trees spreading into the north slopes of forests. You know, it's really affected forest composition and forest structure. Right. And fire is a wonderful way for the ecosystem to reset itself. It thins out the brush. It allows for different species to move in. It can do all of these wonderful things. We also have a really difficult time with fire in an ecosystem where we've built up into the forest. You know, there are more and more people building in what's called the wildland-urban interface, so there are homes encroaching in areas right up against some of these very dense stands of forest. And so finding this balance of bringing fire back for all of the necessary ecological purposes that it serves and not putting structures and homes at risk is a really tricky place. But I think the scary takeaway could be from these string of terrible incidents that we need to stop prescribed fire, and that that could further compound some of these issues.
Sure. Elizabeth, I also want you to get in on what John spoke about as well. You're a water researcher. You did a big series this past spring. We'll talk about here in a little bit about water. In your sense of it, why is the Forest Service so secretive about this? And the reason I ask that, it seems it would be impossible to get to policy decisions you're describing without being timely about why certain things happen. Am I correct on that? That connection?
I think it's a real conundrum for the Forest Service. They have a directive to use the best available science, and pairing science that's evolving as quickly, particularly around climate change right now, as we're seeing, and the conditions change, and the problem with the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon fire, which also started with a prescribed burn, is that it was an outdated burn plan, and it was a plan that didn't adjust according to weather changing the day of.
Right.
And so where the Forest Service, I think, is stalling out now is in connecting the dots between following some of the changes in policy that came down after last year's 90-day ban on prescribed burns. Then that was a nationwide measure to try to make sure that the Forest Service wasn't starting these kinds of problems. And the changes that have been implemented internally, the changes that have rippled out of major infrastructure bills that passed on a federal level last year, that's allowed for, from what I hear, more staffing, more community outreach. And yet I'm not seeing quite as much transparency around that, and not as much attention to rebuilding the faith from the communities as is needed.
Good point there. Glad you got that in. That's an important point. Paula, thank you for coming in today as well. Appreciate the work you do with the Esekia Association. I do have a question for you on this idea of climate change, how much it might be contributing to this problem. It's an interesting quote in the Santa Fe New Mexican from Randy Moore, someone John knows well, the Forest Service chief here in the state, of course, that these kind of fires, holdover fires, are, quote, a recent phenomenon caused by prolonged droughts associated with climate change. Does that absolve the Forest Service a little bit here, or should they have been a little quicker in understanding, yeah, we're in the middle of climate change, maybe you need to make some changes as well? I'm interested in your thoughts on where he's coming from on that.
Sure. Let's put this into context. The Cerro Grande fire was also started by a prescribed burn. So that was 20 years ago.
Thank you.
So if indeed the Forest Service was keeping up with all of the changing conditions related to climate change, those new protocols should have been in place by now.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think there was an institutional failure. I don't think it absolves the Forest Service to say, well, it's climate change, because we've known about climate change for decades. So those fires preceded Hermit's Peak, the Cerro Pelado burn pile, which was a holdover. Though there was enough procedures in place to ensure that the fires wouldn't get out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there was perhaps some human error, but it was more importantly, I think it was institutional error, because they're not keeping up with the pace of climate change. The moisture content of the trees is very low.
Right.
The soil moisture is very low, and we're dealing with higher temperatures. So there's all these factors that contribute to fires getting out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of information in the investigation reports about mistakes that were made.
Mm-hmm.
And are we gonna learn from those mistakes? That's a good question. You know, I don't wanna be in the next community where there's an escaped prescribed burn.
Right.
And there's gonna have to be a lot of change in the Forest Service to regain the trust of the communities that they that they serve. The forest-dependent communities, the land-based people. These fires affected some very, you know, from a perspective of land-based people.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at pueblos there's tribal lands that were impacted by Cerro Pelado. There's downstream traditional rural communities that were impacted.
That's right.
And regaining the trust of those communities is going to take some dramatic change. They're not tweaks to manuals. It's an overall management approach. And I think they need to listen better. I think they need to adapt more to climate change and integrate those lessons learned. Because if it takes a whole year to figure out what went wrong, the pace of institutional change is going to be too slow to keep up with the demands. And we don't get, I mean, being from a forest community, we don't get a lot of comfort hearing that, we have some better rules now. And
That's right.
it's going to take some a lot of concerted effort to make that happen.
I can see that for sure. Speaking about slowness, John, we're talking about making people whole here. Congress approved nearly $4 billion to compensate victims of the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon wildfire, as we know. Are victims of the Cerro Pelado fire entitled to federal money, or is the current slow drip of FEMA, as we know, as for funds for survivors? What's going on here? How are people being made whole here, and can they be, so actually?
It's clear that we have an obligation as a broad community to those communities like Paula's that were so dramatically damaged by these fires. It is clear that the system that we have set up to do that is failing us.
Right.
We have to do better, but it's a hard problem. Mm-hmm. Like figuring out how to help rebuild communities is a non-trivial problem. So if I had the answer, or if the answers were easy, right, they would be done. Right.
That's right. But
it's important, because a lot of the folks watching this program, folks living in urban areas, are thinking, this is not my problem. But in fact, what we have is a broad shared responsibility because the water supply, for example, that Albuquerque and Santa Fe gets flows through forests. Flows through forests that are a mix of private land and state land and federal land. And programs like the Rio Grande Water Fund, where we're trying to bring together many of the people who are the beneficiaries of what this forest offers, not just leaving this as a problem of the federal government and the folks who live there, but New Mexico as a whole is dependent broadly on these forests. Mm-hmm. And understanding that solving this problem, dealing with the changes we need to make in a forest, is sort of a shared responsibility.
Yeah. Elizabeth, where does the state step in? I get this question a lot. We talk so much about the Forest Service, the federal government, all that kind of thing. Are we doing as much as we could be possibly from a state point of view, in your view?
As much as we could be possibly is a really difficult question to speak to. But I think one of the interesting things I've noted in the after effects of the last year is that the state came forward with a policy of saying you do not start a prescribed fire on something the National Weather Service has declared as a red flag warning day, which is to say that the conditions are dry, the wind is up, fire could spread easily, and that was the situation with the Hermit's Peak fire of those two fires, was that it started with on a red flag day. Yeah. And anyone I spoke to in the course of reporting on that fire said as a land owner, I would never have lit a fire on my land that day. Right. I don't know why the federal government would have. So that the federal government has been willing to hear that statement and that policy from the state and adopt it, even though policy doesn't usually run upstream like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a sign of New Mexico's ability to take a stand on some of these issues and get some responsiveness from the federal government. And that's at least one thing that they've achieved.
Thanks to everyone who contributed to the podcast this week. Keep an eye out for extra episodes up Wednesday, when executive producer Jeff Proctor talks with retired attorney Peter Kubra about the UNM Hospital taking over medical services at the Bernalillo County Metropolitan Detention Center. Then, on Friday, Laura Paskus updates the legal battle between Texas, Colorado, and New Mexico over a 15-year-old water-sharing agreement. For now, follow our pages on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube throughout the week. You can give us feedback or just stay up to date as we post previews and news items leading up to our show on Friday night. Thanks again, everyone. I'm senior producer Lou DeVizio for Monday, August 7th, 2023. This is New Mexico in Focus, the podcast. Have a great week, everyone.